Today is Monday, March 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, nations worldwide take dramatic steps to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. The number of cases skyrockets in Italy. Also ahead, scammers are trying to take advantage of people looking to get tested. It's all on today's International Edition. More than 156,000 people worldwide have been infected with the coronavirus, and almost 6,000 have died as nations scramble to contain the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. Italy had its worst day yet Sunday with 3,600 new cases and 368 deaths in a 24-hour period. Spain had the second most cases in Europe as that country is now on lockdown. And Germany is temporarily introducing border controls with several of its closest neighbors. The UK plans to escalate virus-fighting measures in a sign that country's edging closer to tactics adopted by its European neighbors that it had resisted. Health Secretary Matt Hancock said Sunday the British government is getting closer to the next phase of its action plan, which includes requiring people over 70 to self-isolate, possibly for months. It's also preparing legislation this week that will give it extra powers, such as quarantining people who are sick but refusing to isolate themselves. Britain's virus death toll rose to 35, while confirmed cases there rose to more than 1,300. In the United States, another dramatic step. The Centers for Disease Control is recommending stopping all gatherings of 50 people or more throughout the country for the next 8 weeks. The head of infectious diseases at the U.S. National Institutes of Health is also strongly cautioning Americans against gathering in public places at all and taking the risk of contracting the coronavirus seriously. Zachary Goldman at Reuters files this report.
If it looks like you're overreacting, you're probably doing the right thing.
A top U.S. health official on Sunday said Americans should be prepared to hunker down as the number of coronavirus cases in the country continues to climb.
And it is correct that the infections are going to go up.
Dr. Anthony Fauci of the National Institutes of Health said Americans needed to seriously weigh the risks of contracting the highly contagious and sometimes deadly respiratory illness by going out in public.
You don't want to make a pronouncement that no one should ever go into a restaurant. I mean, I think that might be overkill right now, but everything is on the table. It may come to the situation where we strongly recommend. Right now, myself personally, I wouldn't go to a restaurant.
I am officially declaring a national emergency.
U.S. President Donald Trump on Friday declared a national emergency over the outbreak, and the U.S. House of Representatives later passed an economic relief measure that may go to the Senate this week. But the national response has so far been piecemeal, led by state governors, mayors, school district superintendents, and employers, who have decided on their own to impose closures or direct people to work from home. The containment measures in the U.S. have so far been mild compared to the national lockdowns imposed in Italy, France, and Spain. The virus has infected more than 156,000 people in 142 countries, resulting in over 5,800 deaths. With limited testing available, officials have recorded nearly 3,000 cases and 59 deaths in the United States. Fauci expected private laboratories in the U.S. to ramp up test production this week.
You're going to start seeing tests more and more available until pretty soon they're going to be quite available. But in the next day or so, you're going to find people who are going to say, you know, I wanted to get a test and I couldn't get it. That's going to happen.
As cases climb, the next question becomes whether U.S. hospitals are prepared for a wave of patients.
Hospitals will be overwhelmed.
No, I don't say that. I say it's possible that they could be. But when you say that, people get frightened.
Fauci did not want to cause alarm, but he said the government was preparing for a worst-case scenario.
We would be unrealistic to not pay attention to the possibility that it could happen.
At least one former federal official was prepared to say what that might look like.
Are there enough medical supplies? Not if we have a Wuhan-style outbreak in a major city or multiple cities, which is my concern, that we can have outbreaks of that proportion in multiple U.S. cities.
Scott Gottlieb is a former commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. He said that the virus, which wreaks havoc on the Chinese city in which it is thought to have originated, could have a similar impact on a similarly sized American metropolis.
If we have a Wuhan-style outbreak in New York City, that's going to overwhelm the system. So they need to be building surge capacity right now. In anticipation of that possibility. Now, there's ways to avert it, but that's the risk that we face right now.
U.S. hospitals gearing up for a large surge in patients are worried that school closures will make it more difficult for doctors and nurses to work. They are reaching out to temporary staff agencies and exploring other ways to maintain workforce levels.
As health officials urge people to heed the warnings about social distancing, Americans returning home over the weekend from Europe trying to get in on time before the ban takes effect had to wait for hours to be tested for coronavirus before entering. Citizens were coming into 13 major U.S. airports, including JFK in New York and O'Hare International in Chicago. But Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot expressed anger and frustration with the United States federal government after large crowds arriving from those international flights were forced to stand in long lines. 4 hours.
I want to make known my strong concerns and disappointments with the federal government's lack of preparedness and issuing new directives regarding airport screening. That fail is directly the cause of last night's unacceptable conditions at O'Hare International Airport and other airports across the country. I've had a series of very frank discussions with our federal liaisons, both at the White House and at Homeland Security, to express my concern and disappointment, but also to offer concrete suggestions on how to avoid or at least mitigate these problems going forward. The safety and security of our residents, including those the traveling public at O'Hare, the world's busiest airfield, are our top concern. Last night, we saw their safety and security was seriously compromised, and people were forced into conditions that are against CDC guidance and are totally unacceptable. Thousands of travelers were forced to wait in exceedingly long lines, congregating in concourses and putting themselves and their loved ones at greater risk of exposure of COVID-19.
Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf tweeted Sunday that the government is working to fix the situation and will be adding more virus screening capacity as well as working with the airlines. He says screenings really should take about a minute per passenger. In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke to citizens there Sunday about aggressive steps that country is taking.
We have now declared a national state of disaster in terms of the Disaster Management Act. This will enable us to have an integrated and coordinated disaster management mechanism that will focus on preventing and reducing the outbreak of this virus. We will also be able to set up emergency, rapid and effective response systems to mitigate the severity of its impact. We are imposing a travel ban on foreign nationals from high-risk countries such as Italy, Iran, South Korea, Spain, Germany, the United States, the United Kingdom, and China as from 18th March 2020. We have cancelled visas to visitors from those countries from today, and previously granted visas are hereby revoked. South African citizens are advised to refrain from all forms of travel to or through the European Union, the United States, United Kingdom, and other identified high-risk countries such as China, Iran, and South Korea. This is effective immediately.
Several African governments Sunday closed borders, canceled flights, and imposed strict entry and quarantine requirements to contain the spread of the new coronavirus, which has a foothold in at least 26 countries on the continent as cases continue to rise. In West Africa, Ghana will ban entry from Tuesday on to anyone who has been to a country with more than 200 cases of the virus in the past 14 days. In Namibia, schools were ordered closed for a month after recording its first two cases on Saturday. Other nations have shut down schools, canceled religious festivals and sporting events to minimize the risk of transmission. Here are some of the other important stories we are following at VOA News. Consumers are being warned not to fall for bogus coronavirus home testing kits. Customs agents say they intercepted a package at Los Angeles International Airport filled with vials labeled COVID-19 test kit. Federal officials say coronavirus testing is only conducted in verified state and public labs. The situation for struggling airlines continues to worsen as demand continues to plunge. American Airlines is cutting international flights by 75%, while Delta said Friday it's cutting capacity by 40% in the next few months, the largest in the airline's history. Italy says it will likely take over Air Italia as that airline is unable to sustain itself. And the Vatican says Holy Week ceremonies will go ahead, but without public attendance, as Italy tries to contain coronavirus outbreak. The public will be able to follow via TV, radio, and online media. Several measures aimed at protecting citizen health make it impossible for the rank-and-file faithful to attend. Holy Week begins with Palm Sunday on April 5th, culminating on Easter Sunday a week later, with tradition calling for outdoor masses in St. Peter's Square and beyond on both Sundays. Tens of thousands of the faithful usually turn out for the celebration. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. Sunday's Democratic presidential debate went on despite the pandemic. It's the first with just two candidates, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. The debate, hosted by CNN, is being held in a television studio in Washington without an in-person audience in Arizona as planned. It's also the first since Biden took command of the primary race. CNN, the network hosting the debate, said it was positioning Biden and Sanders' podium 6 feet apart in keeping with guidance from the CDC for limiting the spread of coronavirus. VOA's Jim Malone files this report on the debate.
Well, it was an unusual debate by the normal procedures of these presidential debates that we've seen since last year. Only two people on stage, the two remaining Democrats vying for the nomination. That would be former Vice President Biden and, of course, Senator Sanders from Vermont. And the coronavirus crisis cast definitely a shadow over the entire debate. Both men sought to lay out what they would do in a time of national crisis. Biden says his heart went out, does go out to those affected by it, those who've lost loved ones, those suffering. And he referred to the issue as a sort of national rallying together that the country is now going through. Bernie Sanders was a little more overtly critical of President Trump's handling of the issue so far, said the president's statements at time undermine healthcare officials in the administration in terms of their approach in dealing with the crisis. And I think both men also tried to lay out in detail how they would deal with this. They would ramp up the testing as best they could. Biden said he would take the testing kits from the World Health Organization. Both also talked about the need to ramp up hospitals in terms of coming up with effective ways to treat those people who are going to be affected by the virus. And that would include additional ventilators to the hospitals that are going to be accepting those suffering from the disease. They also talked, though, about the need to help people financially who are affected by the crisis, people who will lose time on the job, people who will lose time because they have to care for children at home, that kind of thing. So they both came up with various types of what they would call bailout programs to help those affected by the crisis. And both said the need would be immediate to get something to those who are hurting because of the coronavirus pandemic going on at the moment. And another note that's interesting was that Senator Sanders tried to pivot at times to make his argument for a more broader government health care run facility. His favorite approach is Medicare for all. So he pivoted to that a few times, saying that this crisis showed bare the needs to improve the health care system in general. Whereas former Vice President Biden was more focused on the immediate nature of the crisis and referred several times that he wanted results, not revolution, in terms of how to deal with this crisis. So at times it was a very spirited debate between the two men. They went over their past records. Sanders obviously is in a bit of a deficit at the moment in terms of where the race stands. And we have four major states voting on Tuesday, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, and Ohio. Biden is slated to do well in several of those states. But, of course, there are questions about who exactly at this point is going to turn out to vote in the primary, given the concerns about coronavirus around the country. But we are at a critical time in the Democratic race. Biden has a lead in the delegate count. He has turned the race around earlier this month with his strong showing in the Super Tuesday primaries and again last week. So right now, Sanders needs to find something to try to turn the race around. And whether this debate was it, hard to say. And certainly most people, I think, right now would want to know from both men what they would want to do in terms of handling this coronavirus pandemic.
People across France voted in the first round of municipal elections Sunday, one of the few major events that authorities have not canceled there or postponed over the coronavirus outbreak. You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Iran is battling one of the worst outbreaks outside of China, as the health ministry reports 113 more fatalities, bringing the country's death toll to 724 amid close to 4,000 confirmed cases. The real number of infections could be even higher, as questions have been raised about the government's transparency. Iran's official leading the response acknowledged the pandemic could overwhelm health facilities in the country, which is under severe U.S. sanctions. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced a series of sharp restrictions on Israelis to combat the spread of COVID-19. The measures include an almost total shutdown of the country, except for pharmacies and supermarkets, and a ban on gatherings of more than 10 people. He also said he wants to use cyber measures to track the locations of those infected. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Speaking on national television, Netanyahu said the coronavirus is an invisible enemy. He said that he would use all means available to fight coronavirus, including technological means he has hesitated to use until now, referring to cyber tools used to fight terrorism. Israel's attorney general approved using cyber measures to track coronavirus patients' phones. Israeli media said it would primarily be used to inform Israelis who might have been in the vicinity of a patient and to ensure that patients under quarantine are staying at home. There are at least 200 Israelis diagnosed with coronavirus, and tens of thousands are under a two-week quarantine, either because they had contact with a patient with the virus or because they returned from abroad. Israel's former Justice Minister, Ayelet Shaked, said that the decision to track the location of patients using their phone is problematic, and she would try to make sure there is as little invasion of privacy as possible. New restrictions that went into force on Sunday closed down all preschools and entertainment venues. Schools were closed last week and classes were being moved online. Professor Golan Shachar, a neuropsychologist, said that so far Israelis are coping well.
I think the Israeli public is reacting the way other publics in the democratic world are reacting, and that is with tension, trepidation, but in my humble opinion, without panic.
There were long lines at supermarkets despite Netanyahu's assurances that everything would remain open. Most Israelis were ordered to work at home or put on furlough. The Israeli government announced a month-long grace period for paying taxes and said that those temporarily unemployed, including thousands of tour guides, can apply for unemployment. Gil Buffman is the chief economist at Israel's Bank Leumi.
So in the short term, it will draw down economic activity quite substantially, with a focus on specific sectors that are likely to feel substantial difficulties, cash flow difficulties and other types of difficulties.
Meanwhile, Netanyahu's trial for fraud and breach of trust that was scheduled to start on Tuesday has been postponed for 2 months. Netanyahu is trying to form a unity government with former chief of staff Benny Gantz after an inconclusive election, Israel's third this year. Linda Gradstein for VOA News. Jerusalem.
As more and more schools are closing and people are being told not to congregate, businesses are also trying to equip their employees to be able to work from home. Joining us to talk about how remote work has become a key element in the wake of the coronavirus is Chief Transparency Officer with Transparent Business and a former senior advisor to Joe Biden, Mo Vela. Mo, thank you for being with us. Tell us how this is making sense to help employees work from home and stay busy.
We are a software as a service company. We have developed software that has multiple functions in the transparency space. Probably the most relevant function of our software today because of the coronavirus pandemic is that at some point Citigroup had named our software the top people management software of the year a few years ago. And so that is one of the ways that it can be used today as we combat this horrible virus. And so it allows employers to monitor a remote workforce. And so what we know from watching other countries and dealing with this virus, and now we're having to deal with it in the United States, what we have figured out from watching all this is that one of the easiest and quickest ways to mitigate the spread of the virus is to stop making your employees and large masses of people to congregate. So one of the best ways to address that is remote workforce. A lot of folks have been headed that way in the private sector for years anyway, but a lot of employers have been reluctant because there's really no way to truly monitor your employees when they're working remotely. Our software allows you to do that without invading their privacy.
How does that happen?
Yes, because what we do is we do screenshots every 3 minutes, and we do keystrokes. We do not record your keystroke data. We don't know what you're typing. We just know that you are typing. Okay? Screenshots, on the other hand, are very fascinating that our software provides because the employee actually gets to control at the end of the day what screenshots of their work throughout the day gets to go to their manager and their employer. So if you went and shopped
online, you clearly you don't want your boss to know that, right? So
right.
You're not going to approve that screenshot to be sent in claiming that you were working.
Right.
So what this does is it holds people accountable, but it doesn't take away your power to determine your privacy.
As far as the coronavirus goes, you know, more and more offices and buildings and businesses are telling yep. people not to come in. And, you yep. know, if we just completely halt productivity, that's going to even have more detriment to not just our economy, but the global economy. So it totally makes sense because disease, this especially something as infectious as this sounds like it is, and people
absolutely.
Touching things etc. So it just seems like a no-brainer to have people just work from home but not be out of work.
It does. But and what we're very, you know, we're very, very sad and very, very concerned as a company, obviously, for, you know, this virus and the rapid spread of it all over the world. It's bittersweet because we're really glad we have a solution and a tool that will help in mitigating its spread. It's a bad, bad situation. I'm glad that we are able to step up and offer something that can make a difference and save some people's lives. And frankly, what really concerns me is that when folks find out that this type of a solution and tool exists, not using technology and the solutions at hand in some way is, it feels immoral. We've got something that can help. And we don't need to cripple the economy by keeping everybody at home. And then if you're worried that you're not going to really know what people are really doing and that's going to hurt your company's growth, we've got something that can help.
Obviously, this is not just a matter of convenience or even the environmental aspects of commuting. This is actually potentially a matter of life and death, that working, teleworking, as the government employees call it, or remote working, however you want to call it, really seems like it could be a very big part of emergency preparedness.
Yes, and you raise a very excellent point. One of the, obviously, the reasons that you want to look at teleworking or remote workforces as a part of the solution and the mitigation of the spread and risk is not just because of the congregation of people in the workforce. You raise an excellent point. It's also the congregation of people in mass transportation. So it's trains and buses where we've got people congregated. So we're going to be able to alleviate some of that stress and burden and take away a lot of the opportunity for this virus to spread if we give people an opportunity to work from home and give their employers and managers and the government the tools to monitor appropriately.
I got everything I wanted.
And breakout star Billie Eilish is opening up about why her song Everything I Wanted is so dark. She says she was in a bad place emotionally and struggled with depression since adolescence. She says the song was inspired by her thoughts of suicide. Brother producer says he and his family were insanely concerned when they first heard the song, but Eilish says talking about it was a very healthy step in helping her mental health. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jackson Vunganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day, and please be well. You wouldn't wonder why.
tried to scream, but my head was underwater. They called me weak, like I'm not just somebody's daughter. It could have been a nightmare, but it felt like